Mark Straver from Hortus Loci.
One 103.2 Dublin City FM, Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to the Sod Show with Peter Donegan.
Mark, we are on a boat in London at this moment in time. It's a beautiful setting, beautiful scene. Just in case you hear noises in the background at home, let's first of all take this one direction. What is Hortus Loci?
Well, Hortus Loci is a nursery predominantly, and we try and provide a one-stop shop for landscape architects. So that's what we look after. We look after architects and architects list. So rather than go to 20 different nurseries getting 20 different types of things, as in big trees, small trees, hedging, alpines, bedding, all that, we try and provide everything in one place.
The way I would perceive Hortus Loci, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you would be at the highest end of the market in terms of quality of plants, stock, and literally availability. So anything I want, I can pretty much have if I go to you directly. Is that a fair assumption?
I think that's fairly fair. I think it is. We do try and we're always looking for the best available of everything. Again, with various customers, they can say, look, this is a mid-range job, a top-range job, or this one needs to be done on a budget. But generally it's top-end stuff that we do.
To put that in context, there were how many gardens in Chelsea in 2016?
In total, do you know, I'm not sure. The whole show.
Yeah, I think I'm open to correction on this, but I think it's 60. Is it 16 show gardens? 17. My apologies. Show gardens in total. How many did you supply the entire plants for?
Three in absolute total, and then we helped out another two, and then we also did the RHS garden as well.
Which was Anne-Marie Powell's?
Anne-Marie Powell's garden too.
Okay, so Anne-Marie is a former guest of the show. Who else did you do?
The Cleve West, the M&G garden, so that's a big one for us. We've known Cleve for a very long time. Hugo Bug, that's his second time and his second time with us, so that's very exciting. Then also we have got Anne-Marie Powell's. We've done a little bit for your man, Paul Martin.
Yeah, former guest of the show.
Yep, and also Joe Thompson. And have I missed one, Jamie? Some ovens, of course, in its entirety.
For those who don't know anything about Hortus Loci, that kind of puts you maybe in a little bit of the picture. Let's go all the way back. Did you start the nursery? Was it your father's nursery? Whereabouts are you based? Is it a big patch of land?
It's a big patch of land in Hook in Hampshire. So it's a 17-acre site. But we have access to fields behind. So the most important thing is not to run out of space. So we have more land behind that we could have if we needed it. It wasn't my dad's nursery. No, we started from scratch. We didn't, and we had to borrow everything from two very, very kind investors and the bank, who are horrible.
To your credit on that one, most of the nurseries that I would know now in, let's say, Ireland, and a lot of them, to be quite fair as well, in the UK, they've been passed down from generation to generation, or they're heading towards the second or even the third generation in a lot of cases. Are you a little bit against the grain on that one?
Well, sort of, somewhere in the middle. My granddad was a nurseryman. He came over from Holland as a youngster at the age of 17 and set up a nursery in Chobham originally in the 30s. My dad and my uncle were also in the business, but they weren't interested. So they sold up many years ago when I was still in my teens. But I always loved the nursery, so I started back again when I was a bit older.
So you touched on it briefly there, but what was the first day of Hortus Loci trading? Do you remember that? Was it out of the back of a van like myself, or how did it all go?
No, it was fairly scary because what happened is I had my own garden centre when I was between 19 and 30. I got rid of it when I was 30. I'd had enough and hadn't had any time off and hadn't seen the world, so I had a year off. Then I went to work for Crocus when I went there on day one when it started, and I had a great time at Crocus for 12 years. And then I just got to that age and stage where I thought, I need to do this one more time. So myself, I'm being lazy now. And I had a wonderful time at Crocus. I thought, right, one more time, I'm going to do it one more time.
So you did?
I did.
And you obviously, did you rent a piece of land? Did you borrow it?
We did. We rented a site from a chap who was wanting to sell his site. And we had to make enough money in the first 18 months to buy it, which was terrifying. But we did, just by the skin of our teeth.
Who was your first customer? Do you remember that?
It was, funny enough, I think it was Cleve West or Andy Sturgeon. Oh, Cleve West, Andy Sturgeon and Joe Swift phoned up on day one and said, guys, we're doing Chelsea, how about it?
How, yeah, but that's like Bono ringing you up and saying, you know, Ron Wood from the Rolling Stones wants you to do your garden, and people go, yeah, but how did Bono get your telephone number? Those things don't just happen overnight at that level, if you get what I'm saying.
I do get what you're saying, but I think, having always had my own business when I was younger, and with Crocus being very kind to me and letting me do more or less what I wanted to do, you have that mentality of being self-employed where you, if you have projects, you oversee stuff, it's your project and you're not going to let it go. And I think when I left Crocus, people just said, I want Mark to look after my garden. So that was that.
So how long has Hortus Loci been on the go now?
We will be 5 in October the 11th this year.
That is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a bit fast and furious.
But that's more than fast and furious. That's ridiculous. If you try to make a business plan to say that this is, I'm going to be supplying the plants or the bulk or the most of or all of the plants in 5 Chelsea gardens out of 16 in 2016 after 5 years in business, bearing in mind 2011 wasn't the greatest time to be ploughing money into any business, really. Any bank manager or horticultural brain would have giggled a lot and probably wouldn't have been out of line doing that.
They did exactly that. I mean, it couldn't have been a worse time to start, but then there never is a better time. There never is a good time to start.
True.
We were very fortunate in that I had two friends of mine who got us started as investors. The bank were at the time useless and horrible and horrific, as everyone I'm sure who runs their own business knows. But thanks to the investors, that we got ourselves going.
Let's sidetrack. What's a typical day for you? I gather you work based on this 5-year period. I gather you work extremely hard. In year one, I guess to year 5, maybe has that eased a little bit? Do you do less hours? Do you see home? Are you away from home a lot?
No, I am away from home a lot, and I probably do more every year, but it's basically because I love doing what I do. I have no problem with lots of hours, and I certainly wouldn't do it if I didn't love it, but it's because I like it. The things are happening, the more excited I get, so I'm not worried about anything like that.
How many people does Hortus Loci employ now?
35 now.
Holy... For those of you who know me, okay, you know I work for myself. I literally started out at the boot of my car and I borrowed the tools for my first job. And by year one, year three, there were milestones that people turned around, I guess, and said, that's unbelievable, Jeff, to pardon the Sky Sports pun. But it sometimes it doesn't make sense, but essentially it's a drive. You need a driver, somebody to push it along. Are you a tough boss based on that?
I think, probably, yeah. You'll have to ask Jamie that. I think because I love what I do and I have a real passion for what I do, I love plants. It's all about plants. It's not about... Well, I know it is about running a business and being an accountant and all the rest of it, but it's the plants are what's key to me, and I just love growing plants, and the rest slots into place after that.
So let's go into the horticultural side of it now that you've hit on it. Growing plants is one thing. How many plants would you produce by your own right per, let's say, annum, roughly? You can give me rough guesstimate figures.
Okay, guesstimate figures are around, because we have different lots of different crops. So I'd say about 400,000 perennial. Perennials is what we specialise in. Yeah. And we grow plants in bigger pots than most nurseries would. So our pot size is a 3-litre pot minimum. And we like growing stuff under 5-litre pots and bigger pots too for show plants and for bigger statements as well.
To clarify that for those of you listening at home, if you walk into any garden centre in general, the general size of pot that you'll have is about 2-litre, which for if you held your hand out, if you were a large shovel hand gentleman like myself, it'd be about the size of your hand from your wrist to your finger span, about that size. You go a stage further than that, and then the other size that garden centres mainly do are usually about the size of a coffee mug, which is P9. You have kind of left that market entirely alone and said, no, we're going 3-litre, 5-litre and onwards, and that's it.
Exactly that. What we found is perennials obviously are, in a various sense, as my grandfather recalled them, glorified weeds. And different perennials require different sized pots. And a 2-litre pot is perfect for a lorry, but it's not perfect for the plant. So I can't, but again, liking plants, not interested in transport. We have our own transport anyway. Someone says, oh, yes, but you've got to have 50 that fit on a shelf or whatever it is. You think, well, the plant needs to grow to this size, so therefore the pot needs to be this size. And in 1 year, it needs a pot that's big enough to grow it in. So that's what we do.
But from a business angle, I also know that if a plant grows to, let's say, mathematically 1 foot tall in 1 year and you can sell it for, let's say, £2 or five, let's call it £5 in 1 year. If you hold on to it for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years in your case, let's say, to get it to a 5 litre pot size just for the moment, that makes it a €20 plant, but you have decided not to allow that turnover come into the bank balance and you're 5 years of age.
Yeah.
So you're like the Jameson barrels on the 18-year-old whiskey. In order to keep 18-year-old whiskey on the shelves, you've got to hold back a certain amount every single year from year 1 to 18 until you start to get a return on that. Does that make sense?
Sort of, but not quite right for us. What happens, perennials, or most perennials, they have a value for being bigger in a second year, but not all of them. So there's no value, for instance, in having an Arabis or something in a bigger pot. There is for something like smaller growing hostas. So you select what you want to have in big pots, but also that would be the case certainly for shrubs and trees. But then a lot of the trees that we're buying for clients might be 30, 40 or 50 years old. So it's not a question of us having them and having to wait and sell them. It's a question of knowing where to go and find them.
Okay. That changes things ever so slightly.
It does.
But that is, I guess, that's probably your backstory on years of business in the trade, probably, I guess, would help that.
It does indeed. Yeah, what tends to happen is a lot of, I mean, I think the hard, you know, the basic story is most people do not like travelling or are not good travellers, you know, with kids, families and everything else. So what tends to happen, if you go travelling, you get to see lots of stuff. And the more you get to see, the more people think, oh, Mark will know what to get. And the more you know, the more you do that, then the more you go travelling. So it's a circle. So it means that I'm travelling from, say, end of August through till certainly the first week of April, every week, different place, different country, looking for stuff. So quite a lot to do.
That sounds quite glorified on one hand, in that you get to travel for horticulture's sake. On the other hand, I think by the time I reached about 22 years of age, hotel rooms tended to bore me.
There's a basic rule which I always have when you're going travelling, is you only get one evening normally, so you must have that one evening, and you must not have dinner in a hotel, and you must go and have a decent meal with a decent bottle of wine, and that makes it worthwhile. But I have to say, standing in a wet, muddy, freezing cold field in minus 11 in January is pretty miserable sometimes. But then again, you get to go to Spain or Sicily, and that's not. So horses for courses.
Let's sidetrack here. What did your mom do for a living? Your dad was obviously in the nursery trade.
Yeah, my dad was in the nursery trade until he was in his mid-40s, and then they emigrated to France. So my mum, she had four, we were four of us, so she was pretty much a full-time housewife looking after all of us. She was a full-time mum, God help her, with four of us.
What have you got, brothers, sisters?
I've got two brothers and a sister, but I'm the eldest.
All right, okay. Okay. So was mom around when you set up Hortus Loci? Is she still around?
No. They're all still around, but they went to France when I think they were in their mid-40s, so they'd long since gone. They've been out away in a different country for 25 years now. We did it. We know. So they know. They're very supportive, and you know, we speak on the phone a lot. We don't get to see him very much.
How was your dad in the trade? Did he end up with his own place?
Yeah, he did. He did have his own nursery, but I think I think as he got a bit older, he didn't enjoy it as much as maybe he thought he might. So when he got to mid-40s, he'd had enough, and off he went.
You find some people, they turn around and go, oh, I'd love to play, I'd love to be in a band, I'd love to, or what was the thing back in the boom days, it was, you know, I'd love to do gardening, and they kind of jack in the bank job or the computer job on 1.4 million a year, and they realise, oh God, it's actually cold in January, like you said, minus 11, and it's, I didn't get paid this week, and my socks are wet, this isn't what it looked like on the television, I shouldn't, and you've kind of fall out of love with it very, very quickly. If you don't mind me asking, but did your dad fall a bit out of love with it? Is that kind of, you know...
I think perhaps it did. I think my granddad was a very successful nurseryman, a very big nurseryman. He started with nothing, ended up with 360 acres of nursery land in the days when everything was trees and open ground where you needed space. There was no such thing as pots in the 30s to speak of, apart from young stuff. I think he was a big figure, and I think so. Perhaps his two sons, you know, were forced into the industry, or maybe went into an industry they didn't perhaps like in the days when you had to follow the family business line.
Yeah.
So I think when he passed away, that perhaps they weren't that interested. And also, it was in the days back in the 70s where death duties were, you know, enormous, yeah. And of course when all the value of any nursery is in land and plants, it's not you can't realise cash, which you had to do in those days. So that pretty much finished it off for my dad and my uncle, I think.
So when you kind of said, I'm going to go into the nursery thing, did your dad turn around and go, ah, geez, listen, to, no, you know, because your dad has to give you advice. That's what dads do.
Yeah. Dads do give you advice. Yeah, no dad. Well, he's always been very supportive, but he hasn't got, you know, he's not got too much of a say either way in what's what. We always tend to do whatever we want to do.
Okay. Here's the other question. This is the follow-up on this. Dads always give advice. Sons don't always take it. I know that from experience. Yeah. And sometimes dads get to turn around and go, I told you so. Yeah. And sometimes you get to turn around and go, well, I told you so. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Apologies, Dad, if you're listening to this at home. Yeah. Sorry, mate. No, he doesn't know. We've only got one listener. That's our mate, Jamie. Yeah.
He's in France.
Yeah. Did Dad kind of advise? Did he kind of advise you, or advise you the pitfalls, or what to do because he had been there and done it? And you know yourself, when you're working for somebody, it's very easy to play armchair football manager and say, I would have done that and that and that, and then you go do it and you go, crap, it's actually not that. It's not as easy as it looks.
I think I've always had the you know, ever since I was a youngster, I think the best thing, I'd rather do something and have an epic fail than not do something and always regret it. So I think my dad was when I wanted to play safe and said, Mark, I think you should have stayed at Crocus, or I think you should have stayed, you know, working someone else or whatever, which made me absolutely even more determined to say, no, I'm off and I'm going to do it. And if it's a failure, at least I can say I had a go. I think everyone should think along those lines. Better to fail than not to have ever tried.
Do you take... here's the thing that I'm probably a little bit referring to myself, but you've got, as you noted rightly, in 2016 you had an involvement, let's put it, in 5 gardens in total. If they were downgraded on, let's say, their plants, would you take that personally? Would you lose sleep over that?
I certainly would. But I think suddenly you get to an age and a stage that when you know yourself, I mean, I'm the wrong side of 30 now by quite a long way. And if you think, if I thought anything was substandard, it wouldn't go to the show full stop. There's no, or we wouldn't, everything has to be perfect or it's not going anywhere.
Has it been like that since day one? Is that Yeah,
since day one, yeah. If I didn't want it, if it wasn't good enough for me, there's no way I'd send it to anyone else.
Is that why? Because to be fair, Hortus Loci in UK and Ireland is a brand that I now know has been built within the space of 5 years, which, to be quite fair, let's backtrack on this one, it is nuts that it's happened in such a short space of time. It's very admirable, and I applaud you and congratulate you. But at the same token, there's a part in there from, again, and I'll go back to it, from a business perspective, when the bank man and the investors are calling for their money and you're looking at plants and you're saying we're going to skip these or bin them, that's a tough decision.
I think you just have to believe in what you do and you just have to go for it. At the end of the day, when you've got so-called experts around you like solicitors and accountants and bank managers, none of them are plantsmen. They're not doing what you do. You know best, and you have to stick to your guns and that's it. End of.
2010-11, I haven't noted Sideshow Bingo as the winter of discontent, minus 18 Celsius on Christmas Day. You turn around to the good lady and the children and the dogs and the goldfish and say, you'll never guess what, I have a cunning plan. What did they say?
I turned round to the four walls in my flat and said, you never guess what, I've got a cunning plan. And the mirror said, great, go for it.
Okay, the gentleman laughing to my left is Jamie Butterworth, former guest of the show. We'll be talking to Jamie in a little bit. He's just here for company's sake. In the meantime, can we just dwell a little bit on Jamie? Jamie Butterworth is 21 years of age. He is a former guest of the show. If you listen to this on podcast, just wait till it's over. You're almost there. Go back, listen to the one with Jamie Butterworth, and let me know what you think. It's another phenomenal success story. He's been kind of catapulted into fame, stardom in the horticultural world, if that's okay to call it. Whose call was that?
For Jamie, I think the RHS. Well, with Jamie, I mean, or...
Well, we would have had him on the Sideshow before he was named as an RHS ambassador. Yeah. So he was on my radar via Hortus Loci first.
I first met Jamie when he was at Wisley. And there's various people in the trade that always say, look, keep an eye out for good youngsters. We always believe in having really good youngsters working for us and bringing, you know, and introducing people to the trade. But Jamie had already done that on his own with Wisley. But I have to say, I've never, ever come across someone that's so keen and loves his plants as much as he does and has so much knowledge from such a young age. It's infectious, and it's a great thing to see. And should be encouraged at all time.
It should be. He's been in the, well, no doubt, he's also been on the Sod Show, he's been on the Telegraph, he's been in the Guardian, literally all of the papers. In fact, I think Jane Perrone from the Guardian was on the show a couple of months back, and Jane was saying she was due to have an article out, and we were kind of saying, well, he's a former guest of the show. It's turning into, it's unusual to see a star being made out of a guy that is not the designer but works for the nursery. No disrespect to Jamie or to Hortus.
No, it is. But he, you know, at the end of the day, he works incredibly hard and he loves what he does. So what else could you ask for? That's it, really, isn't it? You can't ask much for that. So he's hugely recognised wherever he goes. It's just an infectious keenness on everything he does, and everyone recognises it immediately.
He's probably listened to this, and yeah.
He's also really annoyingly handsome, which really is quite annoying to him.
we're a podcast. It's all right. Nobody can see him. What's the next steps for Hortus Loci over the next few years?
The next step for Hortus Loci is keep on moving. Obviously, we love all shows, but that's not our proper job. Everything is led by shows, but our proper job is being a nurseryman. We've got lots of exciting things coming up. Mainly, I think, the most exciting thing, it's been bubbling away since I've been in my 20s, and this time we're going to do it properly, but it's a realisation that as time goes by, landscapers in particular, little landscapers, are going to become more and more important. And where people do not do DIY anymore, but people want people to plant their gardens for them. But also landscapers, if they're new landscapers or small landscapers, they get quite a rough deal because they don't get discounts, they don't get help, and they have to go to lots of individual nurseries. So providing the one-stop shop, we want to do that for absolutely everyone. So someone that spends 200 quid on multiples of plants is just as important to us as someone that spends 200,000. And for us, that is definitely the way forward. I think there was a good friend of mine who had to do a study on supermarket on superstores about 10 years ago and said, what is the future of DIY superstores? And they said, if they stay as they are in 20 years' time, there is no future, because unlike you and me, perhaps, where we might have bought a pot of paint and done all the painting ourselves, people are so time-starved, and people don't understand it as well. So why, if you've got a garden and you want to make it nice and you don't understand it, I think people are bored of thinking, well, I planted that plant and it died last week. And if you can spend, if landscapers have been encouraged to have, small jobs and plant up small areas for, 200 quid, 500 quid, 1,000 quid, I think that is the way forward. And en masse, I think that's the way we need to address that.
Your Twitter feed is, do you know it off the top of your head?
Twitter feed is at Hortus Loci.
I was on it there about a couple of months back, and I had been planting some Quercus Ilex in Dublin that week. And I took a screen grab of the trees that you were planting and I sent it to him, and I went, you think yours are expensive? Wait and you see the size of this baby. I won't ask you to try and remember that tree, but here's a random pop quiz question for you. What is the most expensive tree that you've ever sold? You don't have to give me the name of it, but just numbers, approx.
I did it with a few friends of mine recently, and I was quite disappointed because mine wasn't that bad. I think actual sold was about 16,000 quid for an Acer. But there's plenty of trees which can be 30, 40, 50. 30. You're just paying for time. You're not paying a silly price for a silly price. You're paying for time, and that's what happens with big stuff. That's how it is.
People might find that baffling to pay 15 grand for a tree, or 30 grand, or 40, or 50 grand for a tree. I would have planted trees in Dublin for 30,000. It would have been, don't get me wrong, it's not illogic. I think it was a very smart decision.
Yeah, you can have the same tree for a pound if you want, but if you're impatient or you want something big or you can afford it and it's there, why not?
Why not indeed? Mark from Hortus Loci, thank you so much for your time. Being a real pleasure. Thank you.
A real pleasure. Thank you very much.